You're listening to The Zen Courses Show, episode 41. Yes, we're going to get a real world, everyday entrepreneur story. Ready? Welcome to The Zen Courses Show, the show for online course creators who care about building actionable, meaningful, and profitable online courses. If you're a solo entrepreneur, tech geek, or creative, The Zen Courses Show is the place to get expert advice for creating your online course, overcoming overwhelm, and growing a balanced business. To get the full experience, sign up at zencourses.co, where you'll get access to free lessons, resources, and more. Again, that's zencourses.co. Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of The Zen Courses Show. So I am really excited to share this episode with you. If you've been listening to season two since I kicked it off this fall, then you know that one of the goals that I set out for this season was to share more stories with kind of mid-level online entrepreneurs. So instead of always focusing on the people who have, you know, either breakout success or have been doing it for years and are making six and seven figures, I thought it would be great to share a story of someone who might be a little bit more relatable. This is one of those stories. I'm chatting with Dave Graham, and I won't spill the beans, but this interview is great because Dave went through a lot of ups and downs with his online course, and then he finally figured out a formula that worked for him. So I think you're really going to enjoy the story. Listen to the interview, and please stay tuned for the end of the interview where I will answer the question of the week. All right, let's get to it. Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining me for another fabulous episode of The Zen Courses Show. Today, my guest is Dave Graham, musician and founder of musictheoryisyourfriend.com. Dave, welcome to The Zen Courses Show.
Thanks very much. Lovely to be here.
So, Dave, first and foremost, can you tell us where you're joining us from?
I'm from joining you from London in the UK.
Excellent, excellent. I think you're the first Londoner that we've had on the show. Very cool. All right. So, Dave, tell us a little bit about your work and what you do.
Well, the site is really about writing music. It started out actually meaning to be specifically a music theory site, but it ended up being more generally just about writing music, whether that's something that you'd normally find in a textbook or just something that's quite informal. So it's really about writing music, and it's a blog and then a membership site as well.
Okay. And I know that you're a musician, but can you share a little bit about that and how you got to the place of creating a site on music theory?
Well, I really struggled to learn. I'm kind of self-taught. I did some lessons and I was self-taught. And there was, as soon as I was taking lessons, there was loads of things about music theory that I didn't like or that I disagreed with or that I felt could be done better. And it sort of lingered away in the back of my mind that I've got a different take on it for years and years and years. And then circumstances kind of came about where it seemed like the right time to do it. I always really loved music theory, but I was kind of like playing kind of rock guitar. And it wasn't very cool, really, to be that much into theory playing that stuff. And I always felt like an outsider because I was really into theory, but I couldn't play with an orchestra and I couldn't really sort of pursue my interests in the rock side of things. So I always felt like I was a bit of an outsider. And then, like I said, situations sort of came about where suddenly everything kind of fell into place and it all became a bonus and a positive rather than a thing that made me a bit strange on the outside of everything.
Yeah. Now, for those who don't know, and I suppose I should have done this earlier, but what is music theory for anyone who's kind of scratching their head right now?
It's a lot of it is things that you've probably heard of just in general, things like scales and keys and notes and just the technical side of how you describe music. There's loads of deeper stuff. There's things like sort of techniques for writing, and there's a whole load of things that you probably wouldn't have heard of. Some of them are really complicated and some of them are very old. From different parts of history. So you can learn something that will help you understand how people were writing music, you know, 300 years ago, or something like that. And there's all kinds of techniques for doing things that people have come up with. So part of it is learning how to do things that other people have done. Some of it is about understanding just how music works. And some of it is to kind of help you organize things.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. All right, cool. So we're here to talk a little bit about your experience with your course, and we're going to get to that. But first and foremost, I've got some icebreaker questions for okay. you. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, the first one is a very easy one. Cats or dogs? Which side of the fence are you on?
See, I'm a cat person, but we've actually got a dog at the moment. But I like both, but I would go with cats.
Okay. What is, and this is perfect for you being a musician, what is your favorite song?
At the moment, because it kind of changes, a song called, which one is it? It is All Delighted People by Sufjan Stevens. And I think it's just amazing. It's just an unbelievable song.
Okay. I've not heard of it. I'll have to check it out. Cool. So this is another one of my favorites. Name your go-to comfort food.
Ooh, I really like nuts, actually. Any kind of nut. I used to eat so many, especially if I was working at the computer in the evening. I would just get three big bags of them, and I put on loads of weight, and I had to stop. And so I don't have nuts very often now, but I love them.
Okay, very cool. I can relate to that, actually. I have nuts just about every day, so I can relate to that. Okay, if you could have one superpower but no one knew about it, what would it be?
Oh, I think it's kind of the obvious one, but flying I think would be really nice. I think if you could do that and just get to places really quickly, that would be really nice.
So kind of like invisible flying. That'd actually be pretty cool.
Yeah, it would just be, you know, something that'd be really convenient. And you know, even if you just go out at night and have a fly around and no one knows that you've done it, it'd be nice.
Got it. All right, last one. What is the hardest lesson you've had as an entrepreneur?
Oh, there's been so many. I think maybe that probably the hardest thing is to not give up or not get sort of not get put off and discouraged, because it gets so hard, and sometimes, you know, the hard things just carry on for a long time, and it's I suppose the thing that I've learned is that business is problem solving, and so you're always going to be having problems and you're always going to be facing problems head on, and it's when you kind of get your head around that and realize that, you know, every day it's going to be challenges and it's going to be problems that you have to find an answer to. And that it's okay to take a bit of time to find the answer, or it's okay if you find the wrong answer, and you just have to sort of keep going and keep getting over those things. And that was a big lesson for me, was to kind of just accept the challenge and just keep going. And it's, you know, there's been plenty of times where I felt like I can't do this anymore. It's just too hard, and, you know, and but, you know, I have a little moan for the day, and then the next day I get up and carry on, and it just keeps going.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I think that a lot of people will get an aha moment from that business is problem solving. When you think about it that way, it kind of changes everything.
Yeah, when you accept that that's what you're going to be doing in some form most of the time, you know, even if it's coming up with a blog post, or if it's a technical issue, or if it's making a course, or whatever it is, there's always a wave of problems that will come at you, and you have to kind of find a way through them.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your great answers to those rapid fire questions. All right. So we are here to talk about your course, the Music Creators Toolkit. And can you start by just telling us about your course, who it's for, and what problems it solves?
Well, it is for anyone who makes music who feels like they can come up with ideas but have trouble making a track out of them, or a song or a piece of music, whatever it is. It doesn't really matter what style it is. It's if you have trouble kind of putting your ideas together and creating a finished thing. It sort of tackles every aspect of writing music, apart from kind of the actual technical things like recording and that kind of thing, the actual using your ideas and putting them all together into a piece of music.
All right. So we've got a nice overview of your course. And so for anyone listening, just kind of a little bit of a disclaimer, Dave and I are both members of Fizzle. I've been a member of Fizzle since it opened up. I'm not sure. How long have you been in Fizzle?
I did a little trial membership ages ago, And and then I went away for a while because I felt I whizzed through all the courses as quickly as I could on the trial period, and it was just like, ha, I did all that. And then I was really struggling, and I was just like, do you know what? We had some money come in from, I don't know, it was like a tax rebate or something, and I was just like, do you know what? I'm gonna pay for the year and just commit to it. And it was really kind of the community. I mean, the courses are great stuff, but as you know as well, it's like the community side of it, with people kind of spurring you on and supporting you, that over that time really, really helped.
Yeah, the forums are gold. I think that for me at this point in the stage, I did the same thing. I took a break and ran my consultancy business and came back for the community, like you said. So definitely some gold there. So that's how we met. And I saw you posted in the forums about your recent launch success. So I wanted to have you on to talk about launching, because the way that you phrased it in the forums was great, of just sharing how you struggled with it, you know, and I think a lot of people do struggle with launching.
Well,
so yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that for me, most of the time you see people saying all these things about doing these big launches where they've learned, where they've earned like so many thousands and thousands, and you kind of can feel like you're the only person who's maybe done one and you didn't sell any, or you sold one, or you know, it just all kind of flopped and just didn't go, and you feel like you're the only person that that's happened to. And so I was kind of surprised really for myself that this time it had gone right, and I'd actually sort of even tried a bit less than before. I hadn't sort of obsessed over all the little details and trying to do them right by some book or by some course. I'd kind of I'd absorbed a load of this knowledge from learning a load of stuff, but I'd kind of relaxed and just looked at it in a more relaxed, easygoing way, and just said, like, you know, I'm just going to say what it is, and I'm just going to talk to people in a more sort of relaxed way and not feel like I'm really pushing things. And I think I said on the post that that you read that I felt like it was my enthusiasm for what I was doing that really made it work, because instead of trying to do the sales right and trying to write the right words, I really wanted people to do it. And I was just telling people, I really want you to do this course. It's like, you know, I'll give you your money back if you don't like it, because I really think it'll help you. And I haven't had anyone ask for any refunds actually from it. But yeah, I felt like it was my enthusiasm and finally feeling like I was very happy with what I'd created, that I didn't have any reservations about putting it out there and asking people to pay for it.
Mm. I love that. And I definitely want to come back and talk about, because I think that is, there's some good stuff there that we need to get into.
Yeah.
But I also want to take an opportunity to ask you about your experience before this time. So what kind of challenges had you had in the past when it came to launching?
Pretty much everything. I think I've probably done everything wrong at some point. I mean, there's even things, you know, trying to do things really in the wrong format, or sort of getting stuck because you can't get them into the right format, not being very focused about the subject, or sort of pitching it all wrong and sort of attracting the wrong people by what you're saying. So there's all these kind of things that that didn't go right before. And like I said, I think one of the main thing was that I was so aware of all the problems that I was kind of holding back on really selling it. And I don't mean selling it as in, you know, come and buy this, but it's, you know, I just wasn't feeling that confident, and I was feeling like, oh, I don't think this is really going to do 100% what I'm saying it's going to do. And if I made a bold claim for it, I would feel like I don't think it really does that, and I don't feel comfortable asking people to buy it. And there was always that kind of doubt there, and that wasn't there so much this time. And I also got bogged down in sort of technicalities, and you know how these things are. There's a lot of moving parts, and it's very easy to just sort of lose track of things and get stuck with one little part doesn't work, one little cog in the machine doesn't work, and you get stuck on working on that for ages, and it can drain your kind of energy and your confidence. I'm not technical at all. It's like I have to look up HTML code for like putting in images and stuff. I still have to do stuff like that. So, you know, putting together a course that's multimedia. I mean, there's video, there's audio, there's images, there's the text, there's all this membership aspect to it, getting payment stuff. These things I find incredibly hard. And I always sort of seem to have to get them wrong loads of times before I get them right. But, you know, that said, once you get through all that stuff, when it is working and when you've got people going in there and then saying, you know, this has really made a difference to me, then all that kind of struggling is really worthwhile. But yeah, like, I think the things that I've struggled with have been all aspects of it, really, from just getting the wrong ideas, you know, and even going quite far down that road. You know, I'll end up spending weeks creating a course and then realize that, you know, there's some flaw in it that means that there's no point in doing it. I'll maybe buy a plugin to do a specific thing and then realize that that whole road is a waste of time as well. And so there's all kinds of problems, but you know, you can always bounce back from these things.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give people some context, is this the first time that you've launched this particular course?
Yes, this is new. I actually finished it on the day that I launched it. I didn't do any build up. I finished it and then I just launched it straight away. I just sent out an email to my mailing list.
So there was no pre-email where you said, hey, guys, I have something coming. None of that.
I think I'd sent one out saying that I was working on something. I'd sent one out about some other articles that I'd written. And I think I mentioned in that I had something coming, but I didn't mention what it was at all. I was just so glad to be finished. And I finished the course in the morning. And I did the sales page at about lunchtime, and I did the email in the afternoon, and I had sales by the evening. And I wasn't even sure that I was going to finish the course that day, but it was there. It was done just enough. And it had taken a long time, and there was a lot of changes that were going on, and the sort of angle of the course kept on changing. And it started out originally as being an ebook, and then it was just there was no way of doing it as an ebook. I wanted to have something on Amazon. I really wanted to do that, and it was just wasn't working. And so I ended up having to change it around. I mean, the title of the course was written on the last day as well. I hadn't even decided on that. So these are things that before I would have spent a long time sort of mulling over and trying out, and this time it was just, you know, what is it? I'm not going to try and think of a fancy name. It's just this is, and I was just trying to think, what is this course? And I was just thinking, it's a toolkit. It's just a bunch of things that you can use as a musician writing music. You know, you can just use them, and you don't have to do the whole course. You can pick one bit and just use that. You know, depending on the situation. So, it was. It was very quick when it finished.
It sounds like you were so immersed in the content and just you were just focused on that. And also what I'm hearing, it kind of makes me chuckle because you're just doing the work, right?
Yeah.
And that is something that you get to that place after being an entrepreneur for a while and you realize that all of the cosmetic things like the name and the tools and all of that stuff doesn't matter. You've got to do the work, build the thing, and then you can figure out that other stuff as you go.
Well, it's like I was thinking.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I was thinking the other day, like, have you ever gone to buy something online and you're about to click the buy button and then you think, I don't like that font. I don't think I'm going to buy the product because of the font on the sales page. And you don't. You know, if it's a thing that you want, it doesn't matter if the page, you know, is not the most beautiful thing or it hasn't got anything flashy on it. You know, it's all about, especially the relationship that you built up with the, you know, with your audience. I've been quite lucky that I've always been very sort of upfront about ups and downs of things, or if I've messed anything up, I always come very clean about it and very open about it. And it wasn't really like any kind of cynical way of gaining trust or anything. I just always wanted to be really open with people. And it means that I've been surprised at how much people have kind of respect what I do now, and that's been a really nice kind of byproduct of all that. That I can if I've put something like when I launched the course and I put a thing up on Facebook about it, and literally had people saying, I trust you to deliver something that's really good. And it's just little things like that where you think, oh, okay, you know all these things that I've done, all this stuff in the past that I've done, you know, it all sort of adds up, and the goodwill adds up.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about your audience, Dave.
Yeah.
How large, what size is your email list? About how many people?
It was a small one, about 500, because okay. I've never managed to figure out a good way of managing my mailing list. I can't stand using it. I just feel, I don't know what it is. I've just never been able to really commit to building it. And I know that I really should from a business point of view. I feel like what I do doesn't lend itself well to it. And I feel like my audience doesn't really respond to emails. They don't really want to sign up to get emails.
So how do you engage with them?
We get much more from Facebook. Way more. Get nothing from Twitter at all. There's like 2,000 people or something following. I don't know who they are. I know there's a couple of people that are like actually real people, but I don't know if the other ones are like robot ones or something, because if I post something on Twitter, I don't get anything coming through there.
Yeah.
I don't get any response really. Very, very, very rarely. On Facebook, I get loads of, I'm always talking to people on there and, get lots of responses on there. I did do the thing with the mailing list, where you email the people that aren't opening them. And just sort of ask, you know, what's up. And funnily enough, I got loads of responses. And I think I emailed the people that hadn't opened the last 5 emails or something like that. And I got a bunch of replies from people saying, I actually love your emails, but I save them all. And then when I'm on holiday from work or something, I read them all in one go. So even though they hadn't opened emails for, 2 months or something, they actually really liked them and they would read them. But they would just do it way down the line. So that kind of really cheered me up, because, it's always a bit funny sort of looking through. I always find it a bit strange looking through the stats on email lists and stuff. I feel like it's a bit like sort of peeking in at people. It's a bit weird looking at people's behavior. And that as you can tell, I'm not really a mailing list person yet. And I know that I have to be.
Yeah, but you know what I love about this conversation is there are so many people out there, they need to hear this, because there are so many people out there who think that they have to do all of these things and they all have to be perfect at everything. And what I'm getting from you, and what I hope everyone will get from you, is that you don't have to have it all figured out. It's a work in progress. You just have to keep going and continue to serve your audience.
Yeah.
And you're doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm putting them first. And I mean, there's one of the things with the course is that there's a private Facebook group. And that is just really for updating people with what I'm doing. Like, I had a couple of people say there were some paragraphs in the course that they found hard to read. They had to reread them a couple of times to get them. And so I was posting in there. I've gone through and I've fixed those. There's a few typos, and it's just like, you know, I haven't just asked for your money and then disappeared. I'm keeping on working on this, and I want to make it better and better. And I really want your feedback so that I can improve it and make it as easy as possible to understand and to get use out of. And so I think as long as you're putting your audience and your customers first, things do get forgiven. And from a point of view of being an entrepreneur, you can't do everything at once. You have to take things on one at a time. And probably the last thing for me to really actually figure out is what to do with my mailing list. I think I've pretty much got everything else working now, but the mailing list is very, and it's from my side, it's just, I don't know what to do with it. I kept trying loads of things, and I just got tired of trying different things. And it's not, I don't really sign up to many mailing lists, so it's not something that I've got much enthusiasm for anyway, and I don't really know what I would like to receive. So that's still a work in progress as well.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about a couple things before we move on. Number one, you mentioned, we've been talking about how your recent launch was successful. So what was the metric for success for you from either a sales standpoint or how many customers you had? Can you share some of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't a huge money spinning launch, it wasn't thousands and thousands, but it dwarfed anything else that I'd done. I'm trying to think of the stats now, because I think only had 30% of the email list clicked on the first email. Because, oh, I should probably mention as well that when I sent out the email about the course launching, I was doing a 50% discount on it for 4 days. So there kind of a time limit on that offer. Only 30% of the mailing list actually opened that email before that time.
Which is actually a good rate.
Yeah. And 5% clicked on the link, and all of those 5% bought the course.
That's actually pretty excellent.
Yeah. You know,
normally there's a 1-2% conversion. So those are good numbers.
Yeah, they're really good. And it just makes you think if my mailing list was like 100,000 people or something, then I'd probably be calling you from like the Bahamas or something. But it was, I was really encouraged by that. And then because I noticed that 70% of my mailing list probably hadn't even opened the email yet and the offer was over, I sent out another one, just giving another 24 hours to that 70%, just with a very different headline, just sort of doing it in a different style just to see if it would catch their attention. I put in brackets, I put time sensitive in the email title, just in case it would, you know, get someone to look at it, not in a sort of like pushy buying way, but just because I wanted people to take advantage of the 50% off. And then I did have a couple of stragglers after that second discount had gone. I had a few people saying, oh, I missed the email. And so I was still giving out the discount like a day or two after that to anyone who just hadn't caught the email in time. And not so many people in the 70% of the list bought, but it was just way up on any engagement I'd had for anything, really. I've even had free stuff that I've done that hadn't got that much engagement. So it's it was that odd experience of going from when I would launch things before and you kind of wait for the sales to come in and then they don't come, or you get one. It's that if you get through the first day and no one's bought it, it's that sinking feeling of I've got it wrong somewhere and this isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. And it was just that within a couple of minutes of sending out the email, I'd got the first few sales. It wasn't even one that had come in, but it was a handful had come in instantly.
That's
right. And it was that feeling of like, oh, this one's working. This one's going all right. And it kind of carried on. It carried on for a few days. So it was a really positive experience. And there hadn't been that many times where doing a launch like this had been a positive experience. It had been sort of disappointing, or it had been so much work. And then you launch when you're really drained and then nothing happens and you just think, oh, it was so much work and it didn't work. So it was very nice to have it as a positive experience. And then from the people that did buy it, I've had all positive feedback from them about it as well. So it's all been very nice.
Cool. So I want to come back to what you were talking about earlier of just the energy that you put into this course and how, you know, you felt differently when you were putting it out there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a similar thing happened to me. You know, I have been on both sides. You know, I like to tell people I am by no means have everything figured out. I've had all the experiences and I've done the same thing, put everything into a course and just felt so drained and just, God, I just want to get this done. Not feeling 100% with it and launching and just having those crickets, right?
Yeah.
That's the worst feeling when you launch and nothing happens. And then I've also had the experience of just really being motivated and passionate about getting something out there and relaxed and calm and just sharing it. And then that's when it takes off. That's when you get those sales. So how was that? Was it intentional for you to kind of create a different emotional connection to your work for this course? Or was that kind of accidental, something that happened because of the content?
It was actually a bit of both, because I did have a sense of wanting to do it differently. And then there was a sense of wanting to do it quickly once the course was almost done. Didn't want to spend a lot of time because I hadn't done a sales page, or I hadn't done an email for the mailing list or anything yet. And when the course was actually finished, I just didn't want to spend any more time on those things, and I just did them really quickly. And I just thought, I'm just going to be very brief and keep it very, very simple, and not really put in anything that I don't need to do. And I'll just be in terms of like the copy, or just be honest and enthusiastic about it, and just say how I feel about it and why I think, you know, people would want to take the course. And so that was all that I did with the sales page, and the promotion was just sort of speak from the heart, really, about why, what I'd done, and why I thought it would be useful to some people.
That's great. I love that. I'm so bad at sales pages. That's one thing that I really struggle with, because we put so much pressure on ourselves to like get it right, you know?
Well, there's also, you know, you can
to hit.
Sorry, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, to hit all of the, you know, we look at examples and we want to make sure that we have the structure and we say everything the way that everyone else is doing. It's a lot. It's definitely a lot of pressure.
Well, yeah, you can end up trying to sort of put your own emotions into sort of someone else's format, or into like someone else's like template. And, and that's what I got kind of tired of. And I just didn't feel like I really had time to sort of go and look up what is someone else saying that I should be doing. And I knew that there were a few things that I would really have to put down there, like the benefits, and then there's like, you know, people would have doubts about certain things. So I just quickly just did bullet points for, and I decided just to do three of each, not to have a massive huge list of them, but just do three kind of benefits, three doubts that people might have, out of the refund guarantee, 7 days if, you know, no questions, refund, and just explained really simply at the top what it was, had a load of reviews that I'd got to show that I know what I'm doing, and then put a PayPal button at the bottom. And I did have that moment where I was looking at it just going, I should really do something more with this, but I just thought, no, I don't need to, it doesn't need to do anymore. And so that was nice, that the one that sort of I put the least effort into, in terms of trying to make it look like anyone else's, it had everything that it needed. There was just that sort of pressure that I'd put on myself to try and make it live up to someone else's standards, I guess. And and so I didn't do that this time. The same thing with the email. I mean, I wrote it like I was writing it to a friend about it, you know, that I was just saying, oh, I've got this finished, I'm really excited about it, take a look at it. And that was pretty much the kind of language I was using. And that got more response than anything else that I'd done.
I love it. So before we move on to the final questions, Dave, I just want to ask about the course itself.
Yeah.
Was this something that, how did you know that this was something that people needed? So did you do any, did you interview your audience? Did you have a survey? How did you know that this was the course to create?
Well, this is the big problem with what I'm doing, is that it is not traditional music theory. If someone wants to learn the kind of music theory you would get in a textbook, I'm not teaching that. And so I'm in that funny position of teaching something that no one's looking for. Because the people who need it don't know that they might need it. And that's been one of the sort of tricky things to try and find out where you can find your audience and how you can, you know, almost kind of convince them that they need to know this. It's a really tricky one, especially with things like SEO and stuff. It's like, you know, people aren't searching for it. So you have to kind of go an indirect route where you go for something that's similar, in a similar area that people will be looking for, and then show them how what you do is a bit different but very useful. With this course, I just went with what I would have liked to have had when I was starting out. There's a load of things that I've learned from experience, and you know, I read like music theory books for fun. So I'm weird like that, but I've read so many, and there's been so much research and so many experiments that I've done, and I've found all these ideas that are really useful, and they're not necessarily difficult or technical. They're just ways of working with music that are really, really useful for putting together songs. And I just thought, if I put all these into one place and just tell people that that's what it is, you know, where the toolkit, you know, name came from.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully people will just, you know, if they understand what it is, then the people that are interested in writing music and finding it really challenging should be interested in that. So I had done research before, but I'd found that usually people weren't sure what it was that they were looking for, or the times that I found people that were looking for specific things, it was usually things that I disagreed with or had a different way of doing. So, I mean, it all gets a bit technical. I can go into details with that. But with music theory, a lot of it is not aimed at people who write music. It's kind of a general subject. And there's loads of different ways that people can be musicians, that they can be, you know, players or singers, or they might, you know, be writers who analyze music. And music theory sort of covers everything. And a lot of it isn't specifically designed for people who create. So if you do a music theory course wanting to become a songwriter, you're going to learn loads of stuff that you don't need to. And a lot of people get put off because they go into it and then, you know, after the second or third lesson, they're like, I don't know what I can do with this stuff that I've learned. And so what I wanted my course to be and to say up front was stuff that you can use. You know, you're not going to have to spend 6 months learning before you can use anything. You know, you can read it and you can use these ideas the same day. So I thought that that would appeal to these people, even if they weren't looking specifically for what I'm selling. It should appeal to the right people, hopefully. And right, it seems like right. After many sort of misfires, you know, it seems like I've got that balance better and managed to sort of explain it better, so that people seem to get where I'm coming from now.
Well, I think that for anyone listening, you know, the recap, if they were able to read between the lines, it sounds like you found the people first. And, you know, you kind of found people who were looking at something similar, and then you educated them on how what you were teaching and sharing was different. And it sounds like your approach is much more practical and easier to get started with.
Yeah, it's very informal as well.
Go ahead.
It was just there's a little bit of sort of kind of snobbery that can go with music theory, that people might think that it's very highbrow, or people who... you know, have learned a lot of music theory might look down at people who haven't learned it. And I'm always saying on the site that, you know, to me, there isn't any difference between people that have learned a lot or people that haven't learned any, because everyone can make music in different ways. And there's just different ways of doing things. And you know, having very technical knowledge can be beneficial sometimes. Just working instinctively can be very beneficial sometimes. In my own personal point of view is that getting the best of both, you know, managing both, getting the best, optimizing your instincts and technical abilities is when you're going to make your best stuff. I kind of have a kind of anti-snobbery line that I don't like. I don't like anyone, you know, sort of saying, oh, you don't understand, or anyone saying, but I, you know, I don't think I should learn this because, you know, it makes you kind of elitist if you learn this. I think that that stuff is kind of... you know, it can happen all over there. What I'm doing is just about enjoying music and making the best music you can through whatever knowledge or means that you want to do. You know, there doesn't need to be any of that kind of snobbery side to it. So that's, I think that some people certainly resonate with that as well. And I think that brings some people in and makes them feel more comfortable.
So Dave, before I ask you the final questions, I just want to take a moment. And can you share the biggest lesson you've had from your journey from, you know, just not doing launches very well to finally having a successful one? What was the biggest takeaway that you had that you could share with others?
Being proud of what you've made and being enthusiastic about it. I think that was the main difference, because I wanted to shout from the rooftops about it being done. Whereas before, you know, it's really been like, putting out something that you don't feel does exactly what you're saying it does, or isn't as good as you thought you were going to do, but you're going to sell it anyway. And you know, there've been times where I'd taken things off or just backed out at the last minute, 'cause I just didn't feel like it was the best that I could do. And so I really feel like the turnaround there was when I'd spent that time, you know, getting these things wrong or not quite getting them right. And it was after making those mistakes, finally getting to the point where you can realize the thing in the way that you want it to happen and to the quality that you want. And also being confident that you can help people if there is a problem, that, you know, I know that I can help people out with it. Or if something, you know, technical is going wrong with the actual site, I know now how I can help people out with it. And so I felt really confident about offering it to people. And I was very excited about having people go through it and seeing what their reaction would be. So, the main thing was enthusiasm. That that really was the difference, I think, for me.
Okay, excellent. So final three questions. First one, where can people find out more about you and your work?
At musictheoryisyourfriend.com. That has kind of got everything there. So another thing, actually, I struggled with the layout of the site for so long. I don't know if you've ever had a similar thing where, you know, just whatever you do with the site, sort of, it just doesn't quite match up to what you think it should be. And eventually I just decided to go with the theme and just stick with it and just be like, this is how it's going to look and that's it. And I have to be happy with it. So I wouldn't waste any more time, you know, tinkering with how the site looks. But there's a blog on there. There's loads and loads of free stuff on there, loads of free articles about all kinds of stuff. Some of it is a bit sillier. Some of it's a bit more serious and technical. But it's certainly, you know, there's a lot there outside of the paid course as well. There's some good and unusual articles on there. I had a lot of people saying that it's given them a lot of food for thought. So, musictheoryisyourfriend.com is where you can find everything, really.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's all right. I was about to do a detour again, I think.
No worries. What's next for you? Anything exciting coming up?
Well, I want to improve the course because it's had really good reactions to it. I'm working on a kind of interactive video, sort of animated version. I've got some software where I can do these, where I can sort of create more multimedia lessons in a sort of single video, but you can actually click on stuff and animate that. So that's really challenging because, like I said, I'm not very technical, so I'm still getting the hang of doing that. But I think that it would bring the lessons alive a bit. And I would like, because one of the things I don't have in the course at the moment is me talking you through anything, and I would like to incorporate some of that. So I think that the interactive sort of animation with voiceover as well means that I can kind of talk people through it a bit, as long as I can slow down and not talk too much, which is what I normally do when I get nervous on the microphone. Start going super fast.
No worries. Well, I can't tell. You sound like a pro to me. So last question, Dave, what's your why? Why do you get up and do this work every day?
It is when I've had emails from people saying, because of what you wrote or the advice that you gave me, I've written the best song I've ever written. And I've had that loads of times now, and it just, every time it happens, you know, you just get that feeling of lightness through the day that, you know, someone out there somewhere, and, you know, I don't even know where some of them are in the world, but, you know that there's people out there who are really happy because of what I've managed to help them with. And that, you know, on its own, even if I wasn't selling anything, even that on its own would be enough for me to feel like it was very worthwhile doing. It gives me a lot of pleasure to know that people feel like that and I've had that effect.
Yeah. Dave, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. This has been fantastic.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on. I've enjoyed it. It's been great.
So, welcome to the outro. That interview with Dave was probably one of the realest interviews I have done on the show. Just the way that he shared, you know, the things that he struggled with and how he just had to push through them. And as well as, you know, some of the things that he failed at and just like the mental challenges of dealing with those failures and just what it takes to keep going. So I hope that was inspiring for you. I certainly enjoyed talking to Dave. So shout out to Dave. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your experience with us. If you want to learn more about Dave and get links to some of the things that were mentioned in this episode, head over to zencourses.co/041. That's zencourses.co/041. And you can check out the show notes and get all of that good stuff as far as the links are concerned. Okay, so let's get into the question of the week. Now, this week's question is coming from Rohi. Rohi says, Janelle, here are my questions. I love that. Where should I host my first online course? Which platform should I use and why? Then he sneaks in a second question, which is it okay to start with text only? So great questions, Rohi. The first one is one that I get quite often. And I get it so often that I actually have created a video on it. So if you go to zencourses.co/FAQ for frequently asked questions, you will be able to see my video, but I'll just sum it up right here and now. Which platform should you use and why? So the hard answer to this question is that you should use the platform that is going to have the features that you need for your online course. To be completely real with you, just to keep it 100%, most of the online course platforms have similar features. So it really boils down to seeing what technology is important to you and customer service and all of those good things that kind of mingle in with making a decision. But another important factor is what you are most comfortable using. So what's easiest for you to use? Now, right now, the top two platforms are Teachable and Thinkific. You probably, if you've checked out, you know, my site, then you know that I talk about those two. They're pretty much neck and neck with the same features. In my opinion, Teachable is a little bit easier to use from a usability standpoint. It doesn't mean that you can't figure things out on Thinkific. It's just that things are a little more intuitive on Teachable's site. So they have the leg up there. I also like how Teachable does their landing pages. They're really clean and well designed. So you don't really have to put too much energy and effort into that. Now, Thinkific wins on one, they have been in the game the longest. They've been around for, I want to say, 10 years or so. They've been doing this the longest. So any other platforms out there are essentially kind of copying from Thinkific, because Thinkific has been in the game the longest. So they, you know, that they're in it for the long haul. They do this and they have great customer support. The downside to Teachable is if you are using their free plan or their basic plan, which I think is $39 a month, they hold your money for 30 days. I don't know why that's what they do. You'd have to ask them, but I like to put that out there and let people know that if you go with Teachable and you're not on the $99 a month plan, or maybe it's $79 a month, anyway, the professional plan, your money will be in limbo for 30 days. So if cash flow is a thing for you, then go with Thinkific. Also, if you want to go with a platform that has been around the longest and is also still pretty easy to use, but has great customer support, then I think Thinkific wins there. Now, that being said, I have to give a little honorable mention for Coach. With Coach.com is a new platform that is out right now. And they don't have as many features as the other two because they're brand new. But in my opinion, they have the best pricing and they are great for people who maybe don't have or don't want to have a mailing list, don't want to buy a service for landing pages, because they package all of that in. So they're kind of an all-in-one platform. So to sum it up, if you're looking for the platform that you can get started the quickest on, Teachable is going to be the one to go with. Just know that unless you're paying more money, they're going to hold your money for 30 days. If you want a platform that doesn't hold your money for 30 days, is also has killer support and has been in the game the longest, so the most experienced, go with Thinkific. And if you want to try a new platform that's kind of an all-in-one solution that's going to give you landing pages, the ability to create your course, as well as put up other digital products, go with Coach. Okay, I'll be sure to include links to all of these within the show notes. Once again, I know this is not, you know, everyone wants me to just recommend just one platform, but it's not really easy to do that because they're very similar and it kind of depends on your needs. So that is my answer to your first question, Rohi. The second question you asked is whether it's okay to start with text only. Absolutely. Of course, there's so many people out there who get started with text and graduate. Start where you are. I'm a big advocate of starting where you are. So the important thing is just to be communicative and upfront with your audience and let them know that this is kind of a minimum viable product. You're starting with text. As you grow, you'll add things into the course. So don't be afraid to do that. And again, the most important thing is just getting started. All right. Thank you for your question, Rohi. I hope that that has helped. I hope that anyone else listening who may have had similar questions got some value out of that. That is going to do it for this episode of the Zen Courses Show. Once again, you can check out the show notes at zencourses.co/041. My name is Janelle Allen, and this has been the Zen Courses Show. I will see you next time.